What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, I'm Lydia.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Adam. Let's talk Hoya.
Annyeong.
Hola.
Hello, guys.
Hello, hello, everybody. Today, we're going to do another locality deep dive.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Where in the world is...
Wait, did you change your Wi-Fi? Sorry.
Okay, so...
¿A dónde vamos, Lydia?
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego was like a game, TV show, all of the things. You've never heard of Carmen Sandiego? No. Okay, so where are we going?
Well, this is... I feel like the locality deep dives, there have been several people that have said, oh, that they really enjoyed it and they would like to hear about all the other localities where Hoya are known to be endemic to, and there's large amounts of species from those areas. So we did a Borneo episode, which I feel like a lot of people, like we got, you know, a lot of people that said that they enjoyed it and they're like, we want more. So here it is. And today we are going to talk about Papua New Guinea, which is in Papuasia.
Yes.
I think it's, good for us to kind of explain what all of this entails, because even, you know, like before I got into Hoya, I didn't really know the difference between like Papua New Guinea or Papuasia or Papua or any of those like localities. But a lot of times when we read the publications, they refer to it as Papuasia, which is a botanical region that consists of a variety of different areas in that local area, one being Papua New Guinea, and then we have the province of Papua, which is part of Indonesia. There's also the Aru Islands, which is part of the Maluku province, which is also a country in Indonesia, and then there's the Solomon Islands. So those are what consists of Papuasia. But when we refer to Hoya, Hoyas specifically are distributed in these parts of Papuasia, which is Papua and the West provinces of Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, and then the Solomon Islands. So when we talk about Papuasia, those are generally the areas that we're talking about, because that's usually where Hoya are found.
And on a map, it's directly north of Australia, Papuasia is. And the big island, I think that's Papua New Guinea and Papua.
Papua.
And so that's Indonesia, and they have Papua New Guinea's its own sovereign state, which is kind of wild to think about these giant islands, because Borneo was the same way. There was like three different countries that owned Borneo, however you want to say it. But
and the crazy thing is, and we had said this in the Borneo episode, but Papua New Guinea is the largest tropical island in the world.
It is very large. It is. They said if the sea levels fell, Papua New Guinea would be connected to Australia. There is a strait, you know, like the Bering Strait connects like Alaska to Russia. Underwater, there's a strait underwater that would connect Australia if the sea levels fell, but they're never going to.
Unless I meant it used to be part of Australia, like as a country.
Oh, it was recognized as being like owned by Australia?
No, when the land masses were like connected. Mm-hmm. I read that too, but they said that.
Oh, is it because the sea level was lower?
Yeah.
And now they're rising because the ice caps are melting?
Well, because the ice age like ended.
Oh.
And then that rose the sea levels.
Oh, isn't that crazy though?
But I did hear what you said, because they said it was also connected to part of Asia. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you subscribe to that idea that all of the Pangaea, like all of the land on Earth was connected at one point in time and then split off, because Australia was part of Antarctica and that split off, and then Papua New Guinea, Papua Asia split off from Australia, like,
okay, but
eons ago.
Not that it's important, you can cut it out, but they established their independence from Australia is what I'm trying to say. Like, they were at one point administered or ruled from Australia, even separately from like the physical land ever connecting.
Yeah,
Australia used to like rule them or whatever you want to call it, but they are a sovereign country. That's what I was trying to
say. Well, I read that they were connected, but I mean,
cool.
And that they still are connected if the sea levels went down.
In a way, all of us are connected.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy though? Because when I was doing this research though, I did see a diagram of how it shows like where the sea level is, and then it shows below sea level opaque, and then it shows all the land that's connected in the areas that we don't see, but it's underwater.
I mean, but all those islands around are connected. Like, they're all connected, yeah. But the water
they
is
were
just
saying
like,
about that about Hawaii, too.
Yeah. And that's what's going to happen to New York.
Bye.
Florida.
So when it comes to Papua New Guinea, because it is the largest tropical island in the world, it's known to have huge amounts of biodiversity. Should we talk a little bit about just like the environment of this area?
You know, I feel like when we were doing a Borneo episode, they always said like, oh, this is the most biodiverse spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that still about Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
But it is one of the only tropical islands that actually gets snow because of the elevation and the glacier that it is built off of, or that it is contained within the island. Which is kind of wild to think that a tropical island could have snow. But the highest point of there is almost, I think, like 14,000 feet. Like, that's tall. That's a big mountain. That's a big glacier.
Yeah, but it is like a huge island, and it's known to be dominated by mountain ranges. And the mountains can exceed 3,000 meters above sea level, which you were saying is wild. Like, even in Borneo, they were saying Borneo doesn't go above 2,200. And so this is going like 800 meters above that. I don't know, you know, exactly how much that is, but it sounds like a lot. So that's what we're going to say.
It sounds like a lot.
But they say that because of all the mountain ranges on Papua New Guinea, and maybe we'll just refer to it as PNG, because PNG is Papua New Guinea, but it's divided into a southern and a northern half. The southern half is known to be cratonic, and the northern half is known to be accreted.
What do those mean?
ACCRETED.
Accredited?
Like
a university?
Can
you say ass one more time on this podcast, please?
We're just going to lose our clean rating.
Accredited? I don't know. Okay. Anyway.
I just can't see the words you're trying to say.
But it's basically like different kinds of layers that are on the earth. So the cratonic layer, I guess, is like a really old and stable part of the lithosphere of the earth. And it's the top, like the most two top layers of the earth. And it's supposed to be like very, very light and highly viscous, and like a rock type of a nature. And then the northern part is accreted?
Can you spell that word out for me?
ACCRETED.
Accrete.
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 happens to the D?
Use that in a sentence.
Is it accreted?
Can we get a definition for accreted?
Grow by accumulation or coalescence. Form of gradual accumulation. So kind of like things have like gradually.
So yes. Like volcanoes. So yeah. So
it's like islands. The group of rocks. And so that kind of terrain is known as like the volcanic or the ocean basins or the oceanic plateaus, volcanic seamounts. So that's kind of what divides the biggest parts of Papua New Guinea, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. It's wild that there's, you know, it's tropical rainforest and then you also have like glaciers. And then you also have volcanoes. Like, you literally have it all.
Literally everything.
In that little island.
But it makes sense because, I mean, it's a huge island, right? Like, even when we were talking about Borneo is big. And Borneo is only the third biggest island. And this one is the biggest one. So.
Is it bigger than, like, the U.S.?
I think it's about the size of, like, I think California. Oh, okay. Papuasia.
Here I was like,
covers, dang. Like, an area like California.
Is it bigger than Texas?
But there's also, I mean, there's also an area on Papua New Guinea that's considered to be arid, almost like a desert as well.
Wow.
So like, I mean, they have it all. They were just like, we're going to check all the boxes.
It really is crazy. But much like Borneo, they have the forests as well as like the lowland rainforests and the montane forests. So it really has a little bit of everything. But they said that, you know, a lot of the main features of Papua New Guinea as an island is there's a lot of different climate zones, but most of them are categorized as either wet or like a monsoonal climate where it has the periods of drought and then periods of wet. And so because of that, there's just like this huge variety of biogeographical zones, which supports the richness of species that exist on this island.
And there is a lot. I mean, there was a lot of species of just even plants, but also animals that I was reading about. And I don't think I'd ever want to go there.
What are some of the animals you're reading about?
Well, there is one that I don't think this would be scary, but they call it a tree kangaroo. So it must be some sort of like marsupial that lives only in the trees.
Oh.
But then there was like, they said there was butterflies as big as birds, which would be beautiful to see.
That would be beautiful and terrifying.
Yeah, right?
Like at the same exact time.
That's like some annihilation crap right there. Yeah.
Okay. But they're, okay, the tree kangaroo.
Did you just look it up?
They're adorable.
Okay, so it's, I don't know if I'd go adorable.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go adorable.
I mean, if it was nice enough, I would give it a hug.
It looks like a koala and a kangaroo, kind of like.
Or like a rat and a koala had a baby.
It looks like a koala and a bear and a kangaroo had a baby because look at that. Look at the tail on that thing.
The fur definitely looks very like look at,
look
inviting.
At the, look at the tail.
Yeah. Like, I'd like to make a sweater out of that.
Okay, that is
never mind.
That is not popular opinion these days.
I'll just have the record state that Mai Tai was sleeping, but the squeal woke him up.
Mm-hmm.
The tree kangaroo squeal.
Mm-hmm. No. It's kind of cute though. I don't like the tail, but it's cute. I'll take that.
I just want to pet it.
What if it's like vicious and you go to pet it and it's like, rah!
It's got pointy short teeth. That would be how Lydia dies.
If it came from Australia, it probably will kill you.
Its eyes like turn red and it's like, rah!
I mean, sorry, Chloe from Australia, but you guys got some scary animals.
That is true, though. That is true. Oh, my gosh. Okay. But there are the
elevations.
Oh, the lowland forests and then the lower montane forests, mm-hmm. which is where they find most of the biodiversity of Hoya species on the island. And so like we had said from, you know, the Borneo episode, the lowland forests are like, it's a great habitat for Hoyas, right? Because it's usually covered by trees. It's shaded. It has like the understory with a lot of different shrubs.
Humid AF.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then there's areas where, you know, if it's by like a stream or a river, like there's morning mist that comes and there's light that shines through, and there's canopies. And so that's like a favorite of Hoya, right? And it's the same in Papua New Guinea, but also in the lower montane forests where there's more like cloud coverage. And although the temperatures are lower, there's a lot of like leaf litter and peat and organic matter that oxidizes there that Hoya can, you know, get nutrition from and things like that. So those are also characteristics of Papua New Guinea. But unlike Borneo, like you were saying, there's some like drastic biodiverse areas not seen anywhere else when it comes to like a tropical rainforest. And one of those, like you were saying, is like those upper montane forests where it's super cold. They get snow and it goes upwards to, you know, 3,000 meters above sea level, which is crazy. And they said that they haven't seen any Hoya there. And I don't know if that's because, I mean, there probably are no Hoya there, but I also don't know, like, how many people have actually gone up there.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how far it is. Because, like, on Mount Everest, people try to climb that and they literally don't make it, you know? So.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I went skiing in Canada at this resort called Nikiska, and I don't know how high it is, but when I was up at the top of the mountain on the ski lift, like all of the trees just disappeared. Like every bit of flora.
That's crazy.
Was gone. So I'm guessing there's probably nothing up there.
Yeah. And that's not even at like, they say starting at about 2,600.
Oh yeah. 7,500 feet was Nikiska. And they said that the highest point there is 14,000 feet. So that's double this.
Oh my gosh. So they say like it really ends at like 2,600. Starting at 2,600, they consider that subalpine levels. And there's just like nothing to be found there, which makes sense. Because that's
dry, cold, not a good environment.
Yeah, that's really crazy. But also because it is an island, they also have the shorelines. Which is crazy to think, like you have like these alpines and then if you go all the way to sea level, there's beaches.
Yeah, it's like when we drive from Flagstaff down to Phoenix. Yeah. Like it's like we're in the forest and then complete desert.
It's absolutely crazy. But they were saying that the shorelines, there's not a ton of Hoya to be found there because it's not great conditions, right? Like it's very rough and there's saline winds from the ocean water, really, really strong sun exposure, very, very little shade. But they said that some Hoya do live there and the ones that do like thrive and they're growing abundantly. And so they were saying when the first expeditions were happening in Papua New Guinea, most of the species were the ones that were found at the shoreline were the first ones that were collected and, you know, made into herbarium sheets because that's just what they saw and they were everywhere. So
one of the things that Papua New Guinea is known for is their mangrove trees, and actually they have the highest mangrove diversity, but I bet that's down by the shoreline. I mean, the whole freaking island is just wet. But mangrove trees are, they like exist in swamps, you know, mangrove areas. But I don't know where that is actually on the island though, but I'm guessing it's close to the shoreline. It has to be.
Or, yeah, I mean, you never know. Maybe it could even be in like the lowland forests, because like in Borneo, that's where the dipterocarp trees are in the lowland forests. So maybe instead there's the mangrove trees, because they did say that it's either very wet here or it has some of the more monsoonal weather. So,
which was always weird to me when I first moved to Arizona and we have a monsoon season, and I was like, how does Arizona have monsoons? Because in my head, monsoon just means like
pouring rain. Yeah.
Like you think of monsoons, I think like hurricane type weather. But I guess it just means it rains every once in a while.
It's like a couple of drops of rain and then Arizona's going, it's raining outside, guys.
And those creosote bushes just start emitting that scent.
That's perfect. My favorite though.
The wet dirt smell. Smell the creosote.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love that. But because, you know, like we said earlier, just the biodiversity of the island, there's so many different Hoya that can be found on Papua New Guinea. And I was just reading and going through like the different things. And when I was reading through this, it made me realize, okay, like we just got lucky last year with all the publications that came out. But these things take a long time.
Yes, they do.
Because I noticed, and I don't know why it's just now that I had noticed, but one of the articles that we read last year was the Papuasia Hoya revision number 2. And that was in 2022. But number 1 was published in 2017.
Wow.
Bam. 5 years after.
Yeah. That's how long it takes. How long it took to put out number 2. Isn't that crazy?
That is wild. That was done by Rada, correct?
And Mikhail Simonson? Rada and Natalie Simonson. So, as of right now, the regions or localities that are pretty like well known to have a lot of diverse Hoya species is the Malaysian Islands, Philippines, and Borneo. And New Guinea is one of them as well. But it's definitely one that's being researched currently. Like there's a lot of information, but it's not like fully comprehensive yet. But in 1996, there was a gentleman, Foster, who speculated that there were 74 Hoya species that was found in Papua New Guinea. But we know as of 2022, from the most recent revision that's come through, there are 67 recognized Hoya taxa from Papua New Guinea, 5 of which are subspecies. And then there's 6 species that they're not 100% sure. They're doubtful whether it is or isn't Hoya, but there's just not enough like complete specimen or type material for them to make that determination. So,
wow.
Does that mean, is that because it was in cultivation and not really pulled from in situ, like what they were analyzing to an herbarium sheet?
It's like, yeah, it's like a lot of different things. So some of them, you know, they're just herbarium sheets from way back in the day. I mean, I was finding some Papuasia or Papua New Guinea, Hoya that was published back in like 1913. And so all they have is, yeah. So then all they have are the herbarium sheets. And, you know, 2010, I believe, is when a lot of botanists like really took the time to like live out in the Papua provinces to do more research on Hoya. But at that time, there were some where they couldn't even find them in nature. So
yeah.
it's hard to say like, oh, what is this, you know?
Yeah.
So
I was trying to like think about Papua New Guinea Hoya species, and I didn't want to take like one that Jesse loves, the New Guinea ghost. But I was just reading a lot about like the botanists, and it was a lot of German botanists that were like exploring that. And then there's some questioning on a lot of herbarium sheets were destroyed. There was like a bombing in Berlin's herbarium museum in the World War II. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's sad to think that war, I mean, I know war is destructive, insanely destructive, but that it took out like probably a bunch of research, because like you said, that was from like 1913, that one German botanist was doing a lot of Papua New Guinea stuff. So womp.
That is really crazy, though.
So it's 67 species, 5 subspecies from the latest that we know.
From the latest that we know, correct. But you know what was really interesting to me, though, was when we were talking about the Bornean Hoya, there's so many species from Borneo. As of what we know right now, there's 85 species and 4 subspecies, but only 50 of them are endemic to Borneo. But when it comes to Papuasia and the Hoya from Papua New Guinea, of those 67 Hoya, 90% of them are endemic just to Papua New Guinea.
Wow. Hola, Hoya friends. So we launched our Patreon, aka Peduncle Pals. It's been a joy connecting more with all of you, chatting in our Facebook group, and sharing more behind the scenes through our exclusive Patreon episodes every month. We're blown away by your support, and we're so grateful for every one of you that is joining us on this club. You can subscribe through our Patreon link through our Instagram bio, episode descriptions, or show notes. See you there.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
So Papua New Guinea Hoyas, they have the ascension number PNG, as you stated, right?
Not
or that's locality information.
Yeah.
Species PNG.
Mm-hmm. So I know, and even, you know, they were saying like these days there's a lot of Hoya coming from Papua New Guinea that they just haven't had a time to research yet, and they'll start circulating in market before then. And since they don't have a name, people will, you know, put the locality information. So PNG from Papua New Guinea, or even what it was like a couple of years ago, we had the species Papua for like the IM Hoya, yeah. And then like Medusa even at one point gotten as species Papua, even Leucantha at one point was just species Papua. So it's just like locality information.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I think Papua New Guinea is like one of my favorite regions, because they're saying that there's several morphological extremes that they assess in Papua New Guinea. One of them being that in Papua New Guinea, they found the smallest leaf Hoya, which is the Hoya microphylla.
You have that.
I don't have that one. That one, the leaves are so tiny. I mean, they are like, when you have a new leaf coming in and it's just like the tiny leaf that you see, that's how small they are. But there's microphylla, microstema, and then
micro.
No, I think it's micro.
Okay.
I think this happened in our last episode. The one that I just uploaded. Yeah.
Okay. But I think this one is micro.
Micro. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really weird, but okay.
I know. It is kind of weird to hear micro.
I think so, but I'm not sure. That's just how I'm saying. But there's microphylla, micro stemma, and then there's another one. But anyway, smallest leaves. And then they're also known to have some of the Hoya with the largest flowers, like Lauterbachii and Hoya gigas are found from Papua New Guinea. But the thing that really gets me most excited, and I've realized that a lot of the Hoya on my wish list are Hoya from Papua New Guinea, because a lot of the species are known to have the large campanulate or ursulate corollas.
Yeah.
And they were saying that's really unique to Papua New Guinea, because usually in like the Bornean or the Philippine Hoya, most of those Hoya have reflexed or revolute corollas, and only some of the species have the campanulate blooms. But to see that so many of the species in Papua New Guinea have those big campanulate flowers is like, oh, beautiful, because those are my favorite.
My goal is to have more of those bloom in my collection.
There are literally just so many of them, and a lot of them are on my wish list, so...
So we'll get there eventually.
I don't know. Because the animals, Adam was saying. Could you imagine the insects that are maybe there? If it's wet, there's going to be some mosquitoes. And I'm a mosquito magnet.
Are you?
Yeah. Same though. I'm like, they call each other, like, hey, there's a block of sugar here. You come get it.
This girl doesn't drink any water. This is some thick.
Yeah.
This is some thick blood.
I don't know what it is, but.
We got a milkshake walking down, people.
We got a thick milkshake.
Oh my gosh. Okay, but when Jesse and I were in Alaska, I was like, there's no mosquitoes in Alaska. It's cold. And we went on a hike and literally, like, Jesse was slapping mosquitoes off of me because they were following me.
They weren't following me because I did my research and my sister-in-law told me about the mosquitoes. So I bought this citronella bracelet that I now carry on my bag everywhere. Literally repelled all my mosquitoes.
Really?
It literally did. And she took it from me for a bit and I was like, I can't handle this. Give me my bracelet back.
But they were literally like, you could see them following me.
In the air follow you.
So I'm sure if I went to Papua New Guinea, I'd end up getting like...
You can just wear a suit.
Bro, I wonder if that could be a diet for me. Like, I just go to Papua New Guinea and get all the blood sucked out of me.
But there's so many different kinds of Hoya from Papua New Guinea. And I feel like a lot of them are new to us. Some of them I do see in market, but there's a lot of them where it's like, oh, I've never seen anybody like sell one of those. But what's a Hoya that you guys saw from Papua New Guinea that you're like, ooh, that one's cute?
Mine came from my man Doug at Vermont Hoyas. I was going to talk about the patella, but then I was like, I couldn't find a publication about the patella. I could find one, but it was in German.
Same for me too, though.
Yeah, it was from that Schlechter guy.
Yeah, I wanted to do the microfilla, and then it took me 30 minutes to get to the article to click on it for it to not be in English.
Yeah, so no. But I wanted to talk about the Hoya Magnifica, which I actually hadn't heard of until I was researching. And this was done by a publication with David Little and David Foster. Were they both Davids? Why am I thinking that's not right? But I think they are the Davids.
There was one time in an episode where we were saying both of them are Davids, remember?
Yeah, okay.
What was that Hoya?
Magnifica. And the entomology for the name is just based on the large, it's large flowers.
Look at those flowers.
So I would say.
Do I have this on my wish list? Let me see.
I would say that the leaf.
Cool, you have a computer right there. Put a Magnifica.
The leaf shape of the Magnifica is a lot like what I would say, like Lauterbachii, Salata. Like it has these ovate, elliptic to ovate shaped leaves, and they're fuzzy. They're pubescent. They're slightly pubescent on the top side of the leaf and then very fuzzy on the bottom side of the leaf. The leaf just kind of looks plain Jane. I mean, I love a fuzzy leaf, but where the star of the show is the flowers. And those flowers can be deceiving from pictures, but they're 1.5 to 2 inches wide in diameter.
They're huge. There's a photo that I'm looking at and someone's hands up against the bloom. And it's like
that's
covering,
our boy Doug.
Like, oh my gosh, it's like covering like two of like his fingers.
Yeah. And it's white corolla and a white corona. But the corona is a little different because the star in the corona, the star on the inside, it's very narrow at the middle. And then at the ends of it, it's rounded and turned up. Almost like the petal of, I don't know how to explain it. But it's really gorgeous.
Oh, they're not flat. They do come up. It almost looks like a spoon.
Yeah, it's like an egg drop spoon. It's really unique. And it's supposed to smell really good. So,
well, I just added that to my wish list. So thank you.
Well, my Hoya is actually said to be impossible to tell apart from the one you just talked about, Magnifica, which is Hoya calcinia.
Oh, okay.
The leaves are supposed
to... I swore you were going to do New Guinea ghost.
Well, I was going to, but the instructions said not one we regularly talk about.
Oh, that's true.
That, like, literally, the moment she said it, I was like...
No.
And then I was like...
Well, let's talk about New Guinea ghost real quick, though, because it was found in Papua New Guinea in the wild.
It's not a mutation. Although a lot of the places I looked on were calling it a mutation, but... It is said to have been found as is in the wild.
Yeah. Silver. Just a silver Hoya just chilling.
Which, okay, which I don't know if y'all have been on the Facebook group recently, but there are people from the last 1 to 2 years who bought random obscure seeds.
Yeah.
They grew them. And they are silver.
No.
And yeah, and it was just this past week. So we're in like the last week of August right now.
Yeah.
And it was just this past week. Somebody random on Instagram posted one. And today I have seen 3 other people who have randomly purchased Obscura seeds. And they grew silver leaves.
That's wild.
And whoa. Tell me why that was the time I was into seeds and I didn't buy it because, like, it's just an obscura.
Yeah.
That's what you get for calling things basic.
That's right.
Because she's always saying that.
In me, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of over silver Hoya.
And what did that have to do with New Guinea Ghost?
Because, oh, like, New Guinea Ghost, like, I mean, it had to start somewhere. It wasn't just like, boop, like, it, you know, had to grow from a seed. And so true. I'm just saying, you know, it's possible that nature does that.
Okay, so you, Jesse, are doing, I'm sorry, Hoya...
Calcina.
Calcina.
Or Calycina?
Okay.
C-A-L-Y-C-I-N-A. Anyway, the leaves pretty much look like an astralis to me, but they're super fuzzy, which one point for her because I love that. But the leaves, the flowers just reminded me so much of a lemon tree before it, like, fruits that I really love that. The flowers are not huge like the Magnificum that you were just talking about, Adam, but they are pretty. They're white and they've got the pink blush towards the middle. And then the corolla itself is just white, creamy. Looks like a toothfish.
Spoon shape too. Like yeah, the same as the other one. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I was looking at Vermont Hoya and he was saying it's pretty easy Hoya to grow. It's pubescent. Fuzzy. I see it as more pinkish center, but he describes it as red. But I'm gonna trust his eyes more because I'm a little bit colorblind. But
it looks like almost like red hot pink. It's definitely not like a blush pink.
Yeah, and he says on here it's very fragrant and can infuse your house with a beautiful lilac scent, which I think would be amazing to be able to bloom in my house. Because
okay, his video of it. Calcina Stargazer.
Mm-hmm.
It's so pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, even just the leaf of that, it since it's pubescent, it looks a little matte and almost looks like it's dull. But I kind of love it.
Yeah. It's almost kind of how like Lauterbachia is and like that super pubescent. Like you can just feel how fuzzy it is type of pubescence.
He said it's in his top 10 list of must-own Hoyas. Well, so that one's moving up on my wish list.
Well, we better own that one. Yeah. It actually is really pretty.
Yeah. But I want to smell that lilac scent because so many Hoyas have the gardenia scent to me.
Yeah.
So.
It would be interesting to smell the lilac. Now, you didn't get to smell it because you weren't here, but the UPT Mayumi? No, Malixi.
Mm-hmm.
The UPT hybrid flowered and it smelled like ginger.
Really?
Sweet ginger.
Yeah, almost like how ginger ale smells.
It was like I've never smelled a Hoya flower like this. Oh, yeah, I did. She was juicy with that drippy drip juice.
It was. I looked at two, but it wasn't super sweet for some reason.
That's
two.
Oh, sorry, Slurp Hater. Love you. One per episode.
All right. I'll love it.
Okay, so we need to find this one.
Yeah, I feel like we really need to put this one up on the
I have seen list. Such a variation in the flowers. Like some of them look kind of all over dull pink with a very bright pink center. I've seen white. Lydia, this is like your least favorite flower, isn't it?
I don't like these. They kind of remind me of like Australis flowers, kind of.
Well, I think it's like a claw.
Just the shape of it. Mm-hmm. It's not my favorite. But... it is other people's. I'm just saying it's not mine since you asked me.
She's not yucking our yum. All right, Lydia, what's your Hoya?
Oh, also, I wanted to ask, did your guys's have any kind of conservation notes on it by chance?
No. I mean, the publication I did was by Little and Foster, and it didn't have any conservation.
Okay. But the Hoya that I chose has been on my wish list for the past year now, ever since I heard about it on this publication. But it's Hoya Evelynae. And Hoya Eveline was one that was published in the recent Papua Revision Number 2 in 2022 by Nathalie Simonson and Mikkel Rada. But the foliage itself, you know, she ain't a looker, has very elliptic ovate leaves, and the leaf is very coriaceous. Not really like a venation that you can see, no pubescence, anything like that. Honestly, it reminds me a lot of like a campanulata or like a danumensis type of a leaf shape. But the bloom is freaking gorgeous.
Okay, I need to look it up. Well, can you spell that again,
Hoya? Yes, Eveline is Eveline.
That is gorgeous.
Oh.
Isn't it? So it's a campanulate flower. They say it's almost rotate because it reflexes just a little bit more. But the...
sorry, but it looks like a badly drawn straw. A badly drawn star. To me, like, that's what I used to draw stars like when I was, like, in third grade. It's cute, but all I see is that. I'm like,
see, all I see is the starfish from Finding Nemo.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
He made it.
Yeah. She's like, okay, yeah. Well, I think it's a beautiful flower. The it Corolla.
Beauty really is in the eye of the beholder, my
the
friend.
The Corolla, which is the outer part of the flower, is this pale,
wonky
pink color. But the Corona is a creamy yellow with a very like maroon center to it. And I think it is such a beautiful, beautiful flower. And they said that it is like thinly pubescent. So I'm thinking if you like look really close, maybe there's some pubescence that can be observed on it. But I didn't see that there's any kind of scent noted, so I don't know what the scent might be, but this one they're saying is named after Miss Evelina Erickson, who is
loved by someone.
Is
unlike me.
She was a member of the Swedish Hoya Society, I believe, passed away in 2009, but named after her because she was a supporter of PNG Works. But this one is critically endangered Hoya. So who knows if I'll ever get it in my collection, which if I don't, that's okay because critically endangered. But... But they say that it's not observed in very many places. It's only known to be in two places, and that's the Crater Mountain and Black River in West Province of Papuasia. So,
and I mean, it is in cultivation though, because Doug has that one. I'm looking at it on Vermont Hoya.
Slide into Doug's DMs or something.
Evelyn A.
What do you need, Doug? City.
But yeah.
But probably though, because Nathalie Simonson has been pretty good, I think, about collecting the type specimens and keeping them in collection. But also, you know, they've been good about trying to send them to botanical gardens for preservation and also growing them out, flowering them for research purposes. So
yeah. Oh, it's so pretty.
Isn't it gorgeous? I really want to know what it smells like.
We'll just have to book you a flight to Papua New Guinea next week.
But those are the ones that caught our attention. And there's so many others. And we'll go ahead and link some articles for Hoya in Papuasia in our show notes. But, you know, research for Papuasia is ongoing. And just doing this episode, I realized that it takes decades of work, because I was reading it was in 2006 that they started looking at the herbarium materials to be studied, to be revised. And from 2006, and part two just came out in 2022. So it's freaking wild.
It does take time. Hopefully they get to them before anything happens to where they're just going to be gone, you know?
Yeah. But I know that Nathalie Simonson, her specialty research area is Papua New Guinea, and she spent 6 years between 2010 to 2016 in the provinces of Papua to conduct major research. naturally. Yeah, and not just Hoya, but a lot of other, you know, types of flora and fauna. And the same with Mikel Rada. One of his study areas currently is also Papua New Guinea. So I'm excited that maybe there's going to be more information to come out. Who knows? But, you know, it takes time because they were saying that, you know, any live plants or rare plants that they were able to locate in situ, they would relocate them to the Lay Botanic Garden and Singapore Botanic Gardens where they grow them out. But also they're working on flowering them to be able to see like, oh, is this actually going to be classified as a Hoya? And since that they've had those Hoya in cultivation, two of them that were published in 2022 were ones that they actually flowered in cultivation. Damn. And then they were able to classify them as Hoya and publish them. And I've been telling Adam this, but which one is it? It's the Microdwarf. That's what it is. The Microdwarf, which they found, I believe it was sometime in like 2010, maybe 2016, around there. But no one's flowered it yet that they know of.
Let's get Adam a cutting.
No.
I assure you it'll flower in like 3 weeks.
Well, wouldn't that be fun though?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? Because right now people are calling it a Hoya, but then some people are speculating that it's a Deschidia.
Oh.
The drama.
But how are we going to know? Nobody who has it is said to have flowered it yet. So.
Okay, but can I say something brave yet controversial?
What? Don't say it.
The Hoya hushgaliana blooms look very akin to a Deschidia.
Beep that out.
They do, to me.
Like the urn shape. I think a lot of the urn shape type of Hoya blooms are like that because a lot of the Deschidia blooms are kind of encased or enclosed in that type of a way. So like Insularis also.
Yes.
But like Insularis, we know they did DNA testing.
I know, yeah. So I'm going to trust, so it's like the, wild, I'm gonna trust right? science. But I mean, even if it does flower, it could still be a Hoya and have a weird Deschidia-esque flower.
You never know. So it'll be interesting to see. So the ones that they were able to find, you know, they're still studying them, but there are also ones where they only have the herbarium species on the sheets alone, and they haven't been able to get any kind of cultivated material. Like from that time period that they were in the forest starting 2010, they just haven't been able to find them. So it'll be interesting to see what becomes of that even.
Wow. I think they need to look harder.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I feel like there should be a program where, like, if your teenager is a bad teenager,
like, you send them to Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, you send them to Papua New Guinea and, like, don't come back until you find this Hoya. And, like, I feel like all the insects and, like, animals and, like, weird forest things will educate these kids back into behaving, and then the Hoya submission. World will win.
Could you imagine?
Good luck with the kangaroo
catch me
monkeys.
Outside. How about that girl in Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I'm just saying. I need these Hoyas found. But and it's like a free trip. Like I don't know. It looks like I would do that.
I'll sign up for it.
Yeah.
But they were saying that the hopes is that. The Hoya species or even just flora fauna of Papua New Guinea or Papuasia in general is going to go a lot quicker because now there's publications out for them. Whereas before, I mean, even a couple decades ago, there wasn't. And so there's a lot more botanists that are now gaining interest, but also the hobby itself is.
But I thought I read something about how like there's some parts of Papua New Guinea that are very protected and very like designated as like, no, don't mess with this because it's, we're protecting it for
like poachers and things like that. I think botanists are allowed to go in there though, just for like studying. Right.
But yeah, I think they are trying to protect some of, cause it's a lot of primary tropical forest, like forests that have existed for since the beginning of time. And they want to make sure it stays,
which I think is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's still quite a bit of logging there.
But let me come through, guys.
Okay. What?
Like protect it, but let me come.
Oh. I thought you were about to be like, let me come through with that knowledge. Yeah, the facts. but I hope y'all enjoyed this episode on Papuasia, Papua New Guinea. I feel like these locality, like sometimes I'm like, oh, I wonder what we're going to learn. They're all just tropical forests. And then once you read about them and do research on them, it's just really amazing the diversity and the different Hoya that come from all different parts of the world, you know? So yeah. This was fun one.
And if any of our listeners are from Papua New Guinea, or go there often.
And you have a floor that we can sleep on. I won't even ask for a couch or like literally just give me a pillow
or and two trees in your backyard where I can hang out my hammock. Because I carry a hammock. And let me tell you guys, that thing is like, I've had some of my best naps of my life in my hammock. Seriously,
okay, why does something tell me though that we don't want to be hammocking in Papua New Guinea between two trees?
I'll bring a mosquito net. I'm good.
I mean, I'd snuggle up to a tree kangaroo.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'll bring Ty and my machete. Then I'll be good.
excuse me. Okay, it's actually pronounced machete.
Oh, thank you. I really needed that all my life. Where have you been? You get
there's
I just want the public to know that Adam just mansplained machete to me and his mic literally just jumped off the table and fell. Let me see.
Okay, also Google bugs of Papua New Guinea. Look at that spider.
Can you imagine that crawling on like on your neck and just being like, hi, yeah, good morning,
babes. I am not hammocking. There's just no freaking way.
Okay, but that's what a mosquito net is for. Nothing smaller than that. The little holes on that can come on you. They'll surround it and wait for you to wake up in the morning. They'll be like, breakfast is served.
This isn't fair. I can't talk because my microphone's down.
Because that's what you get.
Oh my gosh, is this the butterfly you were talking about?
La araña pequeña. That looks like a moth.
Yeah, that looks like a moth.
But yes, the big.
All right.
Anyway, I'm curious. So I do have the Hoya Medusa because I got it from you. But what are some other like Papua New Guinea Hoyas that we might have in our collection? I'm trying to think. So Medusa, maybe not Papua New Guinea, but that was species Papua.
I know that there's a lot that I want.
Onochoides came from there. New Guinea ghost.
Oh, Stenake. Oh, Leucantha is a big one right now.
Potsii also came from Papua New Guinea.
Paradisiae. I feel like Paradisiae is the Hoya of 2023.
And that one came from Papua New Guinea?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so listeners, head over to Instagram, tag us, show us your Papua New Guinea Hoya, because I want to see. So anything that you have that with the location information, PNG, or some of the ones we mentioned.
And you can just do a Google search of your Hoya and put K-E-W at the end, and it can pull up publications. And some of them, I mean, some of them are published in like 1913, right?
Yeah.
And so, hey, your Hoya could be one from Papua New Guinea. You do a little Google search.
But don't forget to head over to Instagram and follow us. We're at let's.talkhoya over there, where we have our show notes. We'll have story posts for today's episode. And you can just catch up on past Instagram stuff. And you can also follow us individually on Instagram. My handle is at notdude.
I'm at thegreenplant.az.
And I'm at perritos y plants. Adios.
Adios.
Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.